Well, let's talk about what's eating what. Every year, over 600,000 homes in the United States are attacked by ravenous termites, costing homeowners well over $1 billion a year in repairs. The answer to this plague has been to cover one's home in a big tent and then fill that tent with deadly methylbromide gas. That methylbromide kills the termites, but it also burns a hole in the Earth's protective layer of ozone. This leads us to ask, can nature provide a better answer?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 525th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Tepique who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards.
Glad to be here.
Producer Carol Stafford's out there on the phones, and producer Kelsey Olson is even rumored to be cruising by. Folks, we are in for a treat today because we are going to travel up to the rainforest of the Great Northwest to look for a natural way to control pests, insect pests. Our guide is none other than Mr. Mushroom himself, Paul Stamets, who's the author of Mycelium Running. Paul, welcome back to the Food Chain.
Well, thank you, Michael. Glad to be here.
Gosh, last time you were aboard, you hinted at a discovery that you had made in a log cabin or an old farmhouse that could change the way we manage insect pests like termites. And you've since received a patent on this technology that covers up to 200,000 species of social insects?
Yeah, I'm honored to be in this position. I'm fortunate to be able to talk to you today, Michael, because we had a big windstorm last night, and I'm powered on generators right now. So if we get cut out, it's because my generators ran out of juice. But I think we should have enough for at least an hour.
Oh, good. We'll make it a fast hour then.
Well, I'm actually sitting in a new house on this very location where my old house was, and my old house was built around 1910 and then added onto in 1965. And, you know, it's not a good idea to build a house with a flat roof in Washington State. We have a lot of rain here.
A lot of rain, and maybe even a snow once in a while.
And I had 12 buckets that were catching water from the drips.
Oh, my
goodness.
And
the house was sloping badly. And one time during a storm, the house actually shifted, and my wife was really concerned, and I told her, don't worry, dear, now the water will flow off the roof faster. I'm always trying to look for a silver lining. But the house was being eaten up by a fungus, which oftentimes happens when you have leaky roofs. And this fungus, which is a brown rot fungus, produces a brown mycelium, was fanning underneath the house. And when it pulps the wood like that, then it makes it much more appetizing to insects.
Uh-huh.
So this is a big picture idea. This happens all over the world.
Sure.
And so carpenter ants came invading into my house. And every morning, because I'm rather fastidious as a house cleaner, and I vacuum constantly, and every morning I have a big pile of sawdust in one location, and I was realizing this house is riddled with carpenter ants. And so I went on to the EPA.gov homepage and looking for fungi that they recommend that would not be toxic to humans, mm-hmm. Nor to animals, that could get rid of carpenter ants.
Well, this is an interesting notion. I mean, we always typically use some kind of pesticide to get rid of ants and whatnot. Why did you look for fungus?
Well, throughout evolution, there has been an amazing dance between fungi and insects. Most ants are fungus farmers. They actually grow mycelium. And a great example is the Aitine ants grow a fungus in their colonies, and so their colonies are honeycomb with this white fuzzy thread-like cells called mycelium, and the mycelium that they cultivate preselects a bacterium, which then produces an antibiotic that prevents Escovopsis, a very vicious parasitic anti-ant mold, from invading the insect nest.
Wow.
So fungi learned a long time, or insects learned a long time ago, if they pair up with certain fungi, they create a host defense of resistance that prevents other parasitic organisms, including other fungi, from invading the nest. This is the way of nature. We're constantly in a state of symbiosis. And so I went to the EPA.gov homepage, and there's a group of mold fungi called Metarhizium, also pronounced Metarhizium. And I ordered some of these cultures. Now, we have a gourmet mushroom farm here, and we have very large laboratories, and they're spore-free environments. And I was horrified when I got the cultures, and they're like penicillium molds. They have all these green spores. And the last thing I wanted is to have green flying spores in my laboratories. And so I quickly cultured some of this, and then I saw something that was very, very strange. This mold, and it looks just like penicillium molds, the same type of molds that you would see on oranges. You know, macroscopically, it looks almost identical.
Right.
But then as the cultures were growing out in these petri dishes, there's this white wedge of no sporulation, of no mold. The mold spores are green, the mycelium is white. And this white wedge came out of this culture. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Let's chase that. And so I wanted
to... So this would be... kind of like a steer, right? We're talking about a fungus that's not making spores.
Yeah, but what I did is I was able to delay sporulation. So ultimately, it does produce spores. But I looked in the scientific literature, and everybody said that these things, which are called sectors, non-sporulating, are bad. Avoid them. And there's sort of a, unfortunately, a masculine-dominated view in biological sciences for a long time that more spores, more missiles, more death. Now, hundreds of scientists who have been working on this over the past 20, 30 years. So there's lots of literature. There are patents out there. They try to take these spore delivery systems to market, but the insects aren't stupid. They would come up to these bait stations that have these spores of Metarhizium, and they'd smell the plague, and they'd turn around and run away. So the spore repellency factor prevented this from going to market. And so even though it worked in the laboratory, and you could dust the backs of these insects with these spores, when you put it in the field, it wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
These insect, the ant and termite colonies have been called factory fortresses, and they have guards at the entrance.
Before we talk about the factory fortresses, you talk about social insects. What do you mean by when you say social insects?
Social insects are any insects that have a queen. They're queen-based colonies.
So they're organized societies.
They're organized societies.
Instead of individuals, you know, running around and raging heck.
And they are totally oriented to protecting the queen. The queen is the source of the eggs, mm-hmm. of course, in the larvae, and she is kept usually deep in the nest, and she is attended by in many cases thousands of workers.
Right. Okay. And now we can talk about this factory.
And so they're called factory fortresses because there are guards at the entrances, and if any insect has some of these spores, any worker or foraging worker goes out and tries to come back in the nest carrying any of these spores, then they are prevented from going into the nest because these insects have learned that this is a pathogenic fungus that could harm them.
So they're kind of like airport security.
That's a very good analogy, right?
So there's guards standing there with metal detectors, and if they detect a, you know, a bad fungus or something, stop. You can't go any further.
But in this case, they decapitate them, and I don't think...
Oh, really?
TSA would be decapitating.
The guards actually decapitate the offending...
Right, and they throw them into a graveyard, and actually they have graveyards, which is really bizarre. But they can't get into the nest.
Mm-hmm.
And so the industry, even though patents were issued, and major companies, Dow, DuPont, Monsanto, all of them were heavily invested in this type of biotechnology, but they couldn't get it to market because of the spore repellency properties. So, but when I cultured this mycelium without spores, then I sort of played a game with my daughter, who was 16 years of age, and there's this little pile of sawdust every morning, and because at night, most people may not know this, but there's an insect party in your house that night.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these insects are nocturnal. And so I grew up some of the mycelium on sterilized brown rice.
This is some of the mycelium that was delaying the manufacture of spores, right?
That's correct.
Right, okay.
And I, but You know, I was really, well, if I put it in a tall dish, they'll have a hard time climbing into it. So I remembered my daughter had a little Barbie doll set. And I said, you still have that Barbie doll set?
Oh, doggone it. We have to take a break, Paul. Just as we were having fun. Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with Paul Stamets, and we're talking about a whole new way. Well, I guess it's not a new way. It's probably a very ancient way, but a way we're learning how to use for the first time of controlling bad insects, like termites, like fire ants, like all of those things that plague our homes. And we're talking with Paul Stamets, who is the author of Mycelium Running, and he is indeed Mr. Mushroom. Paul, you were raised up there in the rainforest of the Olympic Peninsula, right?
Yes.
Where better to become a mushroom fanatic than in the Olympic rainforest, right? So do stay tuned. You're invited to participate in today's program if you so desire. The phone number is 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Water users, you can reduce your need for water by 30% and more, grow healthier plants, and get rid of calcium carbonate deposits, no, not by magic, by installing an Aquamax catalytic converter in your water line that will induce epitaxial nucleation. Listen.
Hello, I'm Karen Kuhn. My father promised me that if I installed an Aquamax, I could grow grass where I've never been able to grow grass. And it's the truth. Was bare and spotty and is now deep-rooted and healthy. It's wonderful. We use much less water, and the plants look absolutely beautiful.
You can reduce your need for water by 30% and more, grow healthier plants, and eliminate calcium carbonate deposits just by installing an Aquamax on your water line. No chemicals, no filters. Explore the possibility. Go to MetroFarm.com, click on the Aquamax Water Saver banner, and save. That's MetroFarm.com. Welcome back out there. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking mushrooms. We're talking another magic of mushrooms with Mr. Mushroom himself, Paul Stamets, author of Mycelium Running. Paul is a longtime resident of the Olympic Peninsula of Washington State, which of course is harbors some of the wettest areas in the United States, and a great place for mushrooms. But mushrooms are just the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, when it comes to what's really going on. Paul, what goes on below that mushroom? Give us a mycology 1A here.
Well, the simplest explanation is that anyone can go outside and just find a piece of wood that's been on the ground for a few months and just lift it up, and you'll see mycelium underneath.
What are the mycelium?
The mycelium is this fine cobweb-like growth. It's everywhere. It is a major construct of the food web, and the mycelium recycles nutrients and breaking down plant and animal material and generates soil in the process. And the mycelium generates soil, and these membranes of cells are everywhere. And the largest organism in the world is a mycelial mat in eastern Oregon, 2,200 acres in size, over 2,400 years old, and it's only one cell wall thick.
Wow.
And surrounded by microbes trying to eat it. And so the mycelium is very exquisitely evolved to prevent parasites, and it seeks partners. And so virtually all plants now are thought to be infused with fungi. We share a more common ancestry with fungi than we do with any other kingdom.
In what respect? I mean, how do you mean? Did we lose you? Click, click. We may have lost Paul Stamets. We'll try to get him back with the help of Carol. So hold on, folks. We're talking, this is the Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. We're talking today with Paul Stamets, who is the author of Mycelium Running. And Paul recently received a patent for, two patents actually, for the use of mycelium or fungal spores to control termites. And this has an immense potential to change the way we manage insect pests, to the extent that there quite possibly could be billions of dollars at stake in the pesticide industry that could be at risk, because this way would make it so much easier to control insect pests than we've ever used before. Paul is the author, as I said, of Mycelium Running, and we've been working with him for a number of years here on the Food Chain, kind of watching his work because it is so fascinating. Most of us, of course, go for walks in the woods and we see mushrooms and we think, quite possibly something good to eat, quite possibly something poisonous to eat. Those of us who really know can pick a mushroom and have it for dinner, and those of us who don't know can pick a mushroom and end up in the hospital, as a family of six did here this past week in our home country of California's Central Coast. But there is so much more that goes on beneath that mushroom, and Paul Stamets has been working on that for quite a while up there in the Pacific Northwest. He has developed mycelium, in fact, that can decompose an oil spill that powerful. And he just received these patents to control termites and fire ants and those things that really plague us, not by poisoning them with a gas or a pesticide like we usually do, but through the use of feeding them mycelium spores that they're able to sneak past the guards of these social colonies and infect an entire nest, and in doing so destroy the entire colony. And so it's really quite an astounding potential. This is the Food Chain, and I guess while we're waiting for Paul, the number has been disconnected. Well, try his cell phone. That might work. Right now, Paul is going through this incredible rain and wind storm in the Pacific Northwest. He was up all night. The wind blew his power out. There is so he's been on one or two generators all night long. And so we're going to try calling back and see if we can pick him up on his cell phone. So if you have any comments, we'd love to hear them about mushrooms, about mycelium, about controlling termites. What's your favorite way of controlling termites? Give us a ring. We're at 831-479-1080 or 800-624-2665. Do you have insect or ant and termite problems? Let us know. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. I am Michael Olson. This is The Food Chain. And if we can't get Paul, I guess I might have to tell you the story myself. But we do have a call here, so we'll pick that up here in just a minute. Folks, this is The Food Chain again. I am Michael Olson, and we have him on his cell. So let's pick him up and give him a try here. Paul, are you there?
Yes, Michael, I'm sorry. We had a big windstorm last night. I'm on a generator, but now the phones have gone dead, so I'm speaking to you from my cell phone.
Well, by golly, we thought we were going to have to wing it on our own here. We have a whole bunch of phone callers, but you were telling this wonderful story about the mycelium, so let's go right back to that.
So the mycelium... you know, if we can go way back, you know, and I want to go through a series of events to put it in perspective. 13.7 billion years ago, the universe formed. That was when the Big Bang happened. Mm-hmm. 4.55 million years ago, the Earth formed. The first organisms showed up on Earth about 3.5 billion years ago. And we share a more common ancestry with fungi than we do with any other kingdom. In fact, in the Journal of Eukaryotic Microbiology, a new superkingdom has been erected, joining animals and fungi together. We exhale carbon dioxide, so do fungi. We inhale oxygen, so do fungi. Most of our good antibiotics against bacteria come from fungi, but we don't have good antibiotics against fungi because we're so closely related to fungi, so they tend to be toxic to us as well. We separated from fungi about 650 million years ago. And fungi were the first organisms on land, and they showed up on land almost 600 million years before plants did. People don't realize that fungi have the ability of munching rocks. They actually break rocks apart and steal calcium, and they pockmark the rocks, and then the fungi came on the land first, and then, you know, plants and other
so
organisms
fungi,
followed.
Fungi was what made soil.
Fungi create soil. And the biodiversity of fungi and all organisms in our ecosystem is essential for healthy environments. We should all celebrate because we are evolutionary successes. We've made it this far. Yahoo! We're here. But the loss of biodiversity and of fungi is like rivets of an airplane popping. And we don't know, with our present state of knowledge of science, at what point will we go below a threshold when the ecosystem will start to unravel. And so the loss of biodiversity, and particularly of fungi, we're losing species faster than we can identify them. There's 1 to 2 million species of fungi in the kingdom currently recognized. Only about 10%, 150,000. 150,000 of those are mushrooms, and we've only identified around 14,000 species.
Wow.
So more than 90% of the mushrooms out there are not identified, let alone all the other non-mushroom-forming fungi. But getting back to this mold...
Till we get back from the break? Can we hold on to you that long, Paul?
I think so. I'm standing on a roof in 33 weather.
Oh, gosh. Go back in for 3 minutes, and we'll come right back to you, okay?
Okay, all right.
Thank you so much, Paul Stamets. Folks, this is The Food Chain. We're talking with Paul Stamets, who's standing on a roof in 30-degree weather in the Olympic Peninsula of Washington State. We're talking about mushrooms, and where else should we talk about mushrooms but in the Olympic Peninsula of Washington State, which is one of the wettest places on Earth. And we're talking about how we use those mushrooms to control termites. Stay tuned. Hey, welcome back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking fungus with the Mr. Mushroom himself, Paul Stamets, author of Mycelium Running, a great book. What a fun thing to read. If you ever want to really get into the world of mycelium and mushrooms, pick up Mycelium Running by Paul Stamets and have yourself a ball. I have. Paul, are you still standing on the roof there in freezing temperatures in the Olympic Peninsula?
Yes, I am. But all is well, so I'm kind of used to this.
Okay, good. So we were talking about the world of fungus.
Yeah, and let me continue on this. So 250 million years ago, there was a great cataclysmic event, and most scientists believe an asteroid hit the Earth. But when it hit the Earth, it put up an enormous amount of dust, and the Earth was shrouded in dust, and so darkness fell upon the Earth. For years, decades, maybe hundreds of years, we really don't know, but fungi inherited the Earth. The plants that died out, many animals died out, 90% of the species became extinct. And then we marched forward again until 65 million years ago, and it happened again. We had another asteroid impact. Both of these events, because sunlight was cut off the surface of the Earth, was a form of natural selection that rewarded organisms that paired with fungi. And so the plants that paired with fungi could get their nutrients from the soil, and they could survive these periods of great darkness. And so these life on this planet has evolved in these complex relationships with other microbes. And we don't live as a solitary organism. We live in these communities. And so going back to the insects, the oldest mushroom ever discovered so far has been an amber, and it's 100 million years old, and it's a cordyceps mushroom.
This is a living thing.
Insects.
This is a living thing.
No, it's encased in amber.
In amber. Okay. Okay.
It's frozen in time, 100 million years old. This is before the dinosaurs became extinct, mm-hmm. and this mushroom is recognizable as a mushroom. 100 million years ago, if you were walking on the surface of the Earth, you could see mushrooms, and you'd recognize them as mushrooms. But there would be no animals that looked like humans. Mm-hmm. These things preceded us by millions of years. And so this cordyceps mushroom is the mold that I'm growing, that I got the patents on.
Wow.
There are two sides of a coin. One side has a life cycle as a mold. The other side has a life cycle as a mushroom. And so this mycorrhizium fungi that I use to get rid of carpenter ants in my house, after it parasitizes an insect, on the insect, boing, a mushroom oftentimes will sprout out.
Sprout out.
And so it shows you, very, very interesting, that way back then, 100 million years ago, And these are called entomopathogenic fungi, fungi that parasitize insects. And they evolved all the way back then. And so I believe in harnessing this wisdom of nature. In the theater of evolution, there's been quadrillions experiments, successful and failures, but through natural selection, these experiments that have succeeded have been evolving, and they're all around us. There's okay. many natural solutions, I think, like this in the world.
Okay, take us to your discovery then.
So at the beginning of this, we talked about my farmhouse, and mm-hmm. I got my daughter's Barbie doll dish, and I put the mycelium, non-sporulating of this fungus, on some rice onto the dish, and I made a big game out of it that we're going to trick the carpenter ants. Fortunately, that was at around 9:30 at night in the summertime. Fortunately, my daughter, around midnight, had to use the restroom, and she walked by and looked down, and there were ants swarming all over this Barbie doll dish, picking up the kernels of rice. So she woke me up and said, "Dad, look at this. This is amazing." And sure enough, they took the kernels of the rice back to the nest. They went past guards, we found out later. They gave it to the queen. The worker spread this infection throughout the entire nest. And 2 weeks later, no more sawdust piles in my house. The insect colony was killed. And then, after it was killed, on those carcasses, they sporulated. And that, because of the repellency factor, insects would not reinvade the house. Now, let me be clear about this. This is not a sick health syndrome fungus. It's non-pathogenic to humans, and especially important, it's non-pathogenic to bees. And the EPA, on their homepage, you can look this up, Metarhizium and Varroa mites, and they're actually doing experiments now because they did not affect bees, and the bees can be used as carrier pigeons carrying fungus back to the nest that then kills the mites. Now, if we lose bees and we lose bats, we lose the major pollinators in nature. And this is what we're so concerned about is, you know, disease vector is a symptomatic of an imbalanced ecosystem.
Right.
And one thing we learn from hundreds of years of science now is that when an organism exceeds the carrying capacity of its ecosystem, diseases proliferate. Well, and this is nature's way of knocking back down disease organisms are trying to come into rebalance.
Paul, more thing, really quick, one point of clarification. How were the ants able to bring these toxic spores into the fortress factory and walk them right past the guards again?
Because it's the mycelium of spores.
Ah.
And so prior to sporulation, I think these things are producing mimicking scent signatures that mimic the fragrances of beneficial fungi that they want to cultivate.
So it smells and tastes like food.
It's like a fungal food. It's great food. This is great. Let's take it to the queen. And so it's given to the queen. It is distributed, and then the whole nest is killed. Now, we've done research trials at a dozen different laboratories. We've tried this against fire ants, carpenter ants, termites. My first patent was issued in December of 2003. After many years, we were able to convince the patent office that if it's good for six or seven social insects, termites and ants, it'll be good for many other insects. And so I'm very thankful. October 17th, 2006, I received a very, very big patent. It's been called an Alexander Graham Bell patent. For all social insects, around 200,000 species.
What is it? Alexander Graham Bell patent?
That means it's a paradigm-shifting breakthrough patent. It's called a disruptive patent because it could totally revamp and, frankly, destroy the pesticide industry that's based on petrochemicals throughout the world. This is a nature-based system. We're not doing any GMO work. I can go into any habitat in the world. These molds, the Metarhizium mold species, sometimes make up to 25% of the fungal populations in the soil. So when these insects are walking on the soil, they're walking on a lethal landscape, and hence they constantly clean themselves. But I found that the mycelium of these fungi, prior to sporulation, you know, are insect-friendly, and they end up carrying them around and giving them to the queen. Now, we actually have tried this against non-social insects, and we are expanding the patent, and it's a really interesting and involved story. But I have been involved, and I'm under confidentiality agreements with about a dozen pesticide companies.
I worked with them for 2.5 years. Most of them did research that proved this worked better than the research that I had done.
Wow.
But I'm unfortunately resigned to one sad fact. The pesticide industry has no motivation to replace billion-dollar profit wheels that have been paid for over time producing toxic chemicals to replace it with a nature-based technology. It only took less than 25 cents for me to get rid of a carpenter ants in my house. It is that powerful.
Can you hang on, Paul? Can you hang on? Paul, we have to take a quick break. Folks, do stay tuned. Paul Stamets, Michael Wright, we're talking mycelium running. We're talking mycelium running pesticides right off the boards. Do stay tuned right back. This is The Food Chain.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back out there. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking with a very special man, Mr. Mushroom himself, Paul Stamets, author of Mycelium Running, who's standing on top of a roof up there on the Olympic Peninsula of Washington, where the winds have been blowing and the rain's been falling. There's no power, and where he's, poor Paul is standing there with his cell phone, and we're so grateful for you to be there right now, Paul. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
So you've got these patents that... that have been called Alexander Graham Bell patents because they are paradigm-shifting patents that may quite well change the way we do things in life. And the thing we're talking about is how we manage and control populations of insect pests. Traditionally, we've manufactured pesticides out of petrochemicals and sprayed them on the environment and killed the pests and other things as well, I guess. How is this going to be different, Paul?
Well, it's different because it's target-specific. And
you mean you can target specific ant populations?
Absolutely.
You mean you can just go after fire ants, for example, and leave other ants alone?
That's correct, because we can go to these mold fungi that are naturally parasitizing fire ants, and I can get one dead insect, put it on a petri dish, and get these molds to grow. It takes me about 12 to 16 weeks before I morph this culture into this non-sporulating form. We've been working with the USDA ARS, which is the Agricultural Research Service. We have a contract with them. We have very exciting research results. This is extremely credible. We have an article in the Journal of Sociobiology by a well-known entomologist that compared our products to FMC's Summons product. Mm-hmm. And beat it hands down. This has been done in field trials and laboratory trials in multiple laboratories. There is not an incentive for the pesticide industry to invest in these type of technologies when it'll replace profit wheels that have already been paid for. They have a interest in and servicing the customer with frequent visits and tenting their house. And it's sort of like the approach of using a shotgun to shoot a mosquito, and that's what the pesticide industry, that causes a lot of damage to the water table, to non-targeted insects.
And, your house there was a perfect example of what you're talking about, because to rid the ants, the carpenter ants from your farmhouse, you would have had to tent the house, you would have had to gas it with methyl bromide, and then you would have had to come back in a couple of years, right?
And the insects come back.
The insects come back.
Yeah, this is the house did not have an insect reinvasion for 5 years, and then we eventually tore it down and I built a new house. I'm currently in dialogue with some of the heavy hitters.
So wait a minute. Let me follow up on that. How much did it cost you to get rid of the carpenter ants in your farmhouse?
25 cents or less.
Okay, it costs 25 cents to get rid of the carpenter ants for 5 years.
And well, plus years. I think it'll go on for longer than that.
Yeah. Well, no wonder it's a disruptive technology, because I spent a fortune to get rid of termites when I bought my house, and I have to do it again and again and again and again.
And I believe strongly that the chemical war against the chemical war against insects is a chemical war against our own biology, and we are still Neanderthals with nuclear weapons. And it's not like our parents tried to create petrochemicals that would cause cancer. There's better living through chemistry. But now we know that these toxic chemicals, you know, are coefficient for creating Alzheimer's symptoms, Parkinson's disease, cancers, other forms of neurological dementia. Who knows? And so these suites of chemicals that have been put into the ecosystem are haunting us, and haunting future generations. I think we need to wake up and realize that nature, in working on these solutions for hundreds of millions of years, to invest in the biological sciences, they are really undervalued. And we are surrounded by these solutions literally underfoot. And if we just wake up and become conscious of what's happening in nature, then we can harness some of these tools that have already evolved.
Do you think that... it sounds to me, Paul, that the pesticide industry looks at a solution like you're presenting and is quite frightened by the prospect.
Because you might say that.
Yeah, there's no, you're trying to sell them a solution to their business, a way out of their business, essentially.
Now, it took us a long time to come to that realization. I was hesitant to engage them at all, but I got involved with a group of partners who wanted to get this to market. And now we're resigned to the possibility that we create a whole new company that will then start. And the cool thing about this is mail order friendly. We sell mushroom kits. This is easier than a mushroom kit to grow. We sell oyster and shiitake mushroom kits. We sell tens of thousands of them. And if customers can grow an oyster or shiitake mushroom kit, this is a lot easier than that, because it's just mycelium. You don't have to actually get it to produce a mushroom. All you have to do is put it down at a locus point where there's been insects that have been traveling, and the workers discover it. And the really cool thing about this is once the workers discover it, they tell other workers, and so there's trail following behavior, and so more and more stream. We've done these experiments where we put wood and the mycelium and the choice test, and they choose the mycelium over the wood, so you can divert them. And more importantly, I'm interested in beneficial insects, and so we make extracts of these fungi. I think we can bring in beneficial insects into the ecosystem using the extracts, which do not kill the insects, but because they're so attracted to the scent that you can steer insect migrations. My long-term view is I'd love to steer a locust plague in Africa into a 55-gallon drum. I think I can do that. And if you take the fogging systems used in Florida that prevent frosting in the orchards, I can fully envision that we could put these extracts into those fogging systems, and you could bring in insect migrations into a central location. For instance, bark beetles, which are causing a huge amount of devastation in the forest ecosystems. I think it has potential for that as well. And then using a combination.
Just a sec, Paul. We have to take one quick break, and then we have a caller who wants to jump on with a question about another disease that and see if there's an answer for Lyme disease. Can you hang on for just one more second?
Sure.
Okay, last break, folks. Right back. Do stay tuned. This is The Food Chain. Well, a couple of minutes left. We're talking with Paul Stamets, who is Mr. Mushroom himself and the author of Mycelium Running. Paul, we've got a question from Margaret. Margaret, fire away.
Hi there. First of all, I'm just really honored to speak with you. I lived with a PhD research scientist from England who is a mushroom research scientist here in Santa Cruz. He was a housemate of mine, so I know you guys are really busy.
We were talking today before the show about what it would be like to live with Paul Stamets up there in mushroom country. It must be a very interesting existence.
He's probably a great cook.
Yeah.
say, Paul, what do you have to say about Lyme's disease, please?
Well, these type of diseases are insect-born. They are carried by insects and, you know, ticks, for instance, as well as the mosquitoes also carry West Nile virus and other viruses, you know, and of course bird flu will be a vector of those going through insects as well as carriers. I think the great thing about this the potential of this technology is that we can control insect vectors. And some of my other research with the BioShield program of the U.S. Defense Department, which you can Google on, we've had tremendously positive results against different viruses. And the combination of the mycopesticides with the antiviral research would be such that I think we could create mycelial membranes infused with both that could attract insect vectors and be able to hold the diseases that they're also carrying. I think there's a tremendous opportunity for really hundreds of PhDs to fly under the umbrella of this discovery. And I hope that the Earth will be a much better place after I'm gone because of this.
Tell us once again, Paul Stamets, how you discovered that one little fact that you could delay the sporing of the mycelium.
Well, it was by two things. One thing, I strongly believe that we should question authority. And one thing that's great about this country is that we can challenge our professors. And it was an edict that was passed down that, you know, these when these cultures produce these non-sporulating forms, they're bad. And again, as I mentioned before, it's more missiles, more spores, more death. And I think nature is much more based on the feminine. And what I use my intuition, I also personally believe that fungi are intelligent. Why wouldn't they? They've been around longer than we have. And so I use my intuition and a combination of circumstances. You know, I kind of stumbled onto this discovery, and it was.
Did you know what it? Did you know what it meant right away, or did you like turn it over?
I just thought that, you know, I didn't want spores in my laboratory, and the spores, you know, were being avoided by the insects, and those two factors. And plus, I've been a boy scientist ever since, you know, I was 5 years old. I started just doing things that other people said wouldn't work, and I think a lot of, and you know, I'm also a, sort of a farmer, and I must say the farmers are inherent geniuses, and their observations of natural systems, and I think farmers should be elevated to a much higher status in our society, because they are in tune with natural systems, and then you give them a little bit of academic training. And I think many more discoveries like this are literally all around us. It's just a matter of us becoming aware of them.
Margaret, do you have any follow-ups?
I just so agree with what he just said about the farmers. Definitely.
Amen. Me too.
Yes. Thank you. Happy New Year.
All right. Thank you so much for the call. Where do we go from here, Paul? What can we do to help spread this discovery around the land? What can we help do to
help? This discovery is, you know, I'm going to promote my book here because Mycelium Running, I wrote it as a manual for the mycological rescue of the planet. It is a tool to be used for present and future generations. It's described in there extensively. It's a foundation or a platform for greater knowledge. And I would encourage people to get it.
And we're out of time. Mycelium Running is the book. Look it up. Paul Stamets, thank you so much. Folks, this has been The Food Chain. Thank you all for tuning in. See you next week.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, bud. Bye.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.